Greetings and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. You know, it's a beautiful day out today. We're looking at this beautiful sunshine, but you know, there's so much disorder that's going on in our world today, and many times it's disguised as truth. And what I'm particularly thinking of today is this continual understanding of war on women, and we're hearing it in more of the newscasts and broadcasts today. But the world wants to disguise what it really is, because they don't bring you the fullness of truth and that understanding. In many ways, the cure has been worse than the condition for many of the women today. And we really need to have an understanding what it means to live in a disordered relationship in this world, and particularly with God. And, you know, we think about abortion and contraceptive, but abortion particularly, which we know to be an intrinsic evil, which really is such a disordered thinking about, we take a healthy child out of a mother's womb and somehow we justify that. And we need to have an understanding that this ultimately is a war on women that needs to be conquered. And today in my studio, I have somebody who can speak on this better than I ever could. And her name is Elise Hilton, and she is from the Acton Institute. She is a communication specialist, mother, a wife, mother of five. They range in age from 22 to 17, and I'm sure she has a constant battle with them all the time. Elise, I want to welcome you here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Deacon. I'm pleased to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. You know, you heard the intro, and I'm sure you have much more to add to that. But, you know, we really live in a world that has disguised this war on women as giving them freedom. And in reality, we've probably taken more freedom away from them than ever before in the history of human race. And we need to make that discussion. And I know you're going to be speaking at the ACT. You're going to be speaking. Where are you going to be speaking on the 8th?
I will be speaking April 8th at Sanchez Bistro, which is just down the street from the Acton Institute of Fulton. And that starts at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
It's free, but you do need to go to acton.org to register, find the events page, and you'll find it there.
That's Sanchez. That's right on Fulton by...
It's on Fulton, just across the street from just down the street from the UICA.
Okay, so, good. What time will it start again?
6 o'clock.
Okay.
Yep, 6 p.m.
To our listeners, I'm encouraging you to go down there and listen to this, because what you're going to hear today is going to be presented powerfully on April 8th. But let's get into this conversation. This war on women, when did this nomenclature start? And, you know, I'm going to backtrack a little bit first. I want the people listening to know you a little bit.
Sure.
Tell me about your background and what brought you into the Acton Institute.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a cradle Catholic.
Okay.
And an Irish Catholic. I think that's good for people to know.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, because that's a whole different breed of Catholic right there. We're feisty.
You have the red hair to prove it.
I do. And my husband and I have been married for almost 27 years.
Wonderful.
We have five kids. They are all adopted.
Okay.
And they're all special needs adoptions, although for the most part, they all function very, very well. I've got three, you know, two in college, two working, so, you know, a couple in high school still.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
Well, I salute you for that, because that is an absolute testimony to the love of God to reach out to those children.
Well, and they... People say that a lot to us, but truly, it's been a gift for us. It's definitely been a challenge in a lot of ways, but there's always grace and blessing.
Yeah.
So,
would these children be adopted at birth, or did you get them when they were later on in life?
Our two oldest were almost 2 years old and 10 months when we adopted them,
okay.
And then the other three, as they came along, they're actually siblings by birth. They have the same birth mother.
Okay,
so. Yeah, we went from having no kids to having five kids in 3 years.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a little crazy there for a while.
And how could you prepare for that?
No, you can't prepare for that.
I wouldn't think so. That's amazing.
You can't prepare for that.
Oh, my. So the house just kept expanding.
Or getting smaller.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you've had this journey, and you said you did your master's degree.
I did. I have a master's degree in world religions from Western Michigan University.
Okay.
And I taught at Aquinas College for a while, until about the time that our third child came along, and then decided to stay at home with them. So I was home with my kids for 12 years.
Okay.
And then went back to teaching at Muskegon Catholic High school for a number of years.
Sure.
And loved that. I just love teaching. It's a passion. Now I'm at the Acton Institute. God presented me with an opportunity to work there about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I can't say enough about the good work that we do there and the good people that are there. And I just look forward to going to work every single day.
Isn't that wonderful?
And
we do know the Acton Institute, Father Sirico is the head of it right now. But this is not just a Catholic institution. Matter of fact, it's not a Catholic institution.
It is not a Catholic institution. We're founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And I have the pleasure of working with folks from virtually every Christian denomination. Mm-hmm. So we have scholars there who are in the Reformed tradition, of course, here in Grand Rapids, Orthodox folks. We work with Baptists, Presbyterians, you know, it's just every gamut. But always really striving to do good, to try and create the free and virtuous society that we're called to do.
Exactly. And you do it in an ecumenical way.
Absolutely.
With all these different denominations.
Yeah. Very respectful. It's a very respectful place to work.
I've been there. And it is wonderful. That's exactly how the sense you have when you enter into that is that this is a place for education, for learning and developing and really taking that message out into the world.
Yeah.
Into what it means to be a free and virtuous society.
Yes.
Living in a society like we live in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. So here you are at the Acton. Something must start getting into your psyche about this war on women.
Well, you know, you said something earlier about freedom.
Yes.
And I think that it was Blessed John Paul II who really talks about freedom and what that means. Freedom doesn't mean that we get to do whatever we want to do, you know, which is kind of the adolescent mind.
Exactly.
You know, I can't wait to grow up and then I can do whatever I want to do. Freedom is the ability to do good.
Yes.
And we've definitely perverted that idea of freedom in our society.
Exactly.
And people have the idea that freedom is I get to do whatever I want to do, rather than what is good.
Right.
In fact, just driving over here today, I saw a sign in front of a business that said, do more of what makes you happy. And that sort of thing drives me insane because instantly I think, well, what if what makes me happy is kicking puppies?
Yeah, immoral or illegal.
Yeah, exactly. What if what makes me happy is torturing people?
Yeah.
It doesn't say do more of what is good.
Right.
Do more of what is right. It says do more of what makes you happy. And that's a prevalent idea in our society today. And I think as women, we've been sold a bill of goods. We have this idea that freedom is to have it all. You can have the full-time career. You can have the family. You can have all of the the big car, the big house, the fancy vacations, all of that, and there won't be any cost to it.
Right.
And I often tell young women in my life, my nieces and young women that I used to teach, that we can have it all. We just can't have it all at once.
That's right.
And sometimes we do have to make sacrifices for what is good.
Yes.
We don't always get to do exactly what we want.
You know, you made a statement about whatever makes you feel good. You know, in the world today, we live in this world of moral relativism, and we focus on a word and we divert the understanding of it. I go back to, well, I'm mostly the name of our president, but somebody who said it depends on what is.
Right.
And we start to make up these understandings. And so people would say, well, good, based on what criteria? Or, you know, they would try and convolute the understanding of goodness.
Yes.
Without any, there's no moral absolutes.
Yes.
Everything is off the table.
Right. That's exactly true. And I think when we're talking about the war on women, that's where we're at. And you asked a little bit about the history of this. You know, back in 1963, Betty Friedan wrote a book called The Mystique of Feminism. And she said that we have made women a sex creature. So we can kind of trace the war on women back to the late 50s and the early 60s. And it was also about that time, interestingly enough, that birth control pills became available, widely available. And then in 1989, Andrea Dworkin, who is a radical feminist, wrote a book called The War on Women. And so we have this in place, this idea that our society hates women, despises women, that men are out to get us.
Is society saying that, or is it a political issue? I guess I'm trying to differentiate between that, or is it society as a whole?
I think you can't differentiate that. You know, when we've got this cultural phenomenon that starts to rise up in the early 60s, that women are being suppressed and held down, that the idea of being a housewife is somehow less than than perfect. In fact, Gloria Steinem. who was the founder of Now, said that housewives were parasitic. That is, that they kind of leached off society. They weren't giving anything back.
Isn't that an amazing understanding of motherhood?
It's an absolutely bizarre thing. But that was kind of the beginning of the war on women. So we had that in place, you know, 50 years ago. And then in about 2010, what happened was is that the phrase started popping up again in our political culture.
Right.
But this idea of war on women always, always, always is tied to what, you know, quote-unquote reproductive rights.
Right, exactly.
Abortion, access to health care is another one of their code phrases.
Right.
But those always are tied to access to artificial birth control and abortion.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the history of the war on women. And then it now has kind of morphed into this battle that we're now having with the HHS mandate. In 2012, Barack Obama produced this video that was called The Life of Julia. And it was kind of the typical American woman, and it followed her from age 3 to age 67, and kind of all of the typical things that a woman would go through in her
experience
in her life. But every single milestone in this woman's life was tied to what the government could give her. And it's very bizarre in that this war on women that the radical feminist movement pushes is that women aren't free. They're not allowed to do what they want to do. They're being suppressed by society. Yet they want the government to do everything they can for us.
Of course.
They want the government to provide free access to birth control. They want the government to provide free daycare, free Head Start, free loans for college. Everything is something that the government gives you, which is a very paternalistic view.
Of course it is.
In that we women aren't capable of doing these things for ourselves,
not
or
only
figuring
that,
these things out.
It keeps you in bondage.
Absolutely.
You're subservient to an organization that is taking care of you.
Yeah. It's a very bizarre viewpoint, and it's strange that the folks that are pushing it, the radical feminists again. And I say radical feminists because I know that there are many, many of us Catholic Christian women who consider ourselves true feminists. And John Paul wrote an amazing, amazing document on women and really promoted what it was that the mystique of femininity is about. But radical feminism is kind of the twisted other side of the coin of that.
Well, it distorts the understanding of how what God's intention was for women.
Yes.
It distorts the truth and the reality of who they are.
Right.
Their image and likeness of God, complementary to the man.
Yes.
And in this understanding of true freedom, you live in the freedom to serve the Lord.
Right. And that all of our feminine gifts somehow need to be pushed down and pushed aside so that we can get ahead in the world. Whether that's making sure that we don't have children until the time is right, so that we can get our career going.
Right.
All of those things say to us women that what it is about you that makes you truly feminine is somehow bad, needs to be suppressed.
Needs to be denied. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So, and I think that in this war on women, there's been a real denial of the conservative voice in the public square and in this debate that we're having right now, especially with the HHS mandate.
At least let me clarify something. When we're talking liberal, we're not talking Democrat or Republican.
No.
We're talking about people who are faithful to the teachings of the church, faithful to the understanding of who women are, Republican or Democrat. It's really an understanding, an outpouring of our spirit to say, this is who you are as a woman.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult sometimes to find the right language to speak, but you know, we've got words like conservative and liberal,
right.
You know, and those of us that may consider ourselves conservative, are folks that really are trying to live out the life that we know that God intended for us, that we have an understanding that there is a God, that he created us in his image and likeness, that is good. Regardless of whether we are male or female, and that God has a unique and specific plan for each one of us, and that we need to be open to that. So I think in the Christian realm, that's the idea of what we're talking about when we're talking about being conservative.
You know, and Alicia, everything you just said is really an understanding of why the church stands against artificial contraceptives, contraceptive, because all the things you just mentioned about being open to God, open to his plan and everything else, it really denies that in a woman.
Yeah, and I think that there are plenty of women out there, too, who can speak to the fact that artificial birth control is so unhealthy for women's bodies.
Yeah, medically.
Medically unhealthy. In fact, Vanity Fair, which is a I don't think you could find a more liberal magazine publication, Vanity Fair, did just a couple of months ago, did a huge expose on the NuvaRing, which is a specific form of birth control, which is implanted in women.
Right.
And young women literally died. There are several documented cases, both in the U.S. and Canada. These women, young healthy women, and I'm talking in their 20s, literally died because they had blood clots caused by NuvaRing. They threw a blood clot, had a pulmonary embolism, basically a heart attack, and died. And there's also a young woman who was an Olympian. She was bobsledder. And the NuvaRing ended her career. She nearly died. And the doctor said to her, the only reason you didn't die is because you are an Olympian. You were in such good physical health that you could sustain it. But you know, we're putting chemicals into our bodies that were never intended to be in the human body.
Right.
You know, aside from the fact that, you know, we're suppressing what God intended the sexual act to be, that, you know, women out there who are, you know, drinking their energy shakes in the morning and they're running every day and they're doing everything that they can in order to be healthy are kind of unwittingly putting chemicals into their
body. Undermining themselves.
Never should be in the human body and really are bad for them.
Now, with Vanity Fair exposing this?
Absolutely.
Which is, you know, what is it that keeps them silent until something tragic like this happens without, you know, I know we're not here to address that whole question, but, you know, there's something really disordered in that, what they would suppress that stuff until something happens, and then they finally have to go out and speak the truth.
Yeah, and even then, people want to deny it, because for many women and for many couples, the idea that there's an idea in our culture that we've sold our young people that we should be able to do whatever we want with our bodies at any time. And there are people who are not willing to give that up. That idea that it's, hey, this is my body and I get to do whatever I want with it. And that I should be able to have sex anytime, anywhere, with whomever I please. And there should be absolutely no consequences for it. Well, there are consequences. And the Vanity Fair article was just is just one way of saying this is one of the consequences. And I don't care whether you're Catholic, non-Catholic, atheist, Democrat, Republican, you know, regardless of what walk of life you're in. If you're a woman who's concerned about woman's health, then things like the NuvaRing, things like artificial birth control should really scare you silly. And you should be willing to step up and say to your fellow women, you know, this is not good for us. We shouldn't be doing this.
And you step away from your own biases at that point to speak the truth. And in many ways, the journalists are handcuffed in that because they just can't seem to break out of that mold. And until something tragic happens, and then they have to freely admit that maybe there is a problem.
And, you know, it's ironic that we're now in an age where we have the ability and the capability of creating and helping women naturally plan their families, naturally space births. You know, the Catholic Church has never, ever taught that women have to have as many babies as they possibly can. And in fact, there's a young woman, a German woman, who's created an app for the iPhone that tracks a woman's fertility cycle. Perfectly natural. It's one of those things that, you know, 20 years ago we could have never imagined. But how easy and how simple. And for women who use their I'm one of them. I use my iPhone for everything. If I lost my phone, I'd be frantic. That a young woman could be able to download this app for, you know, $2 or $3 and have a completely natural way of helping herself and her husband plan their family.
Now, see, Alish, many people would say, well, isn't that contracepting in a form? But the understanding of that is that you're always open to life.
Absolutely.
But it also requires discipline.
Yes.
And order in your life.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean that we just have sex on demand.
Right.
It means that we have to be men and women who can say, I can discipline myself and my body, because, you know, what we've lost the understanding of is these bodies are made in the image and likeness of God. And we do have this, we should be filled with the Holy Spirit. We should image the Holy Spirit. And yet when you talk about these young kids today, and not all of them, but many have lost that concept of who created us and what we're created in.
Well, and isn't it odd that we spend so much time in our society teaching our youngest children good touch and bad touch and being aware of pedophiles and people that might be out to hurt you. And yet then just a few years later, we turn around and start throwing birth control and condoms at them. And saying, you know, go ahead and do this. And, you know, as long as you're taking the birth control pill, as long as you're using a condom, as long as you're quote unquote safe about it. And yet there's nothing safe about it.
Nothing.
You know, in doing some research for this talk that I've got coming up, one of the things that I ran across was that if teenage girls are put on birth control within a year, about 17% of them will become pregnant.
Because it fails.
Because it fails, or here's a shocker for anybody that knows a teenager. They're not the most disciplined creatures in the world.
Forget to pick a few of them.
Right, exactly. They're not aware of how this medication works or
because it's therapeutic, it has to stay in the system.
Exactly. Or you know, their boyfriend says, well, I'll use a condom. You don't need to take the pill, you know, that sort of thing. So you've got about 17% of those girls who end up pregnant within the first year of using birth control. So then they're faced with an unplanned pregnancy. And we know that many of those girls will either choose abortion,
yes,
or be coerced into abortion.
Exactly.
Because we know that many women that have abortions feel pressured either because of family pressure, pressure from a boyfriend, a husband,
yes,
whatever. So then you've got a young girl who's been sexually active, who's faced an unplanned pregnancy, either ends up having an abortion or is giving birth to a child,
yes,
and maybe struggling to be a single mom or a teenage
ill-prepared.
And we know that a child born to a single mom is six times as likely to grow up in poverty.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing is, too, is that if you've got a young girl who starts taking birth control and has a pretty big risk of becoming pregnant,
yes,
in that first year, imagine what the risk of her contracting an STD is.
Exactly.
And now we know that there are many STDs out there that we are no longer able to cure.
That's right.
And that will render her sterile.
Yeah.
So you have a 14, a 15, a 16-year-old girl who's literally been sold a bill of goods by society. Here, take this pill and you will be safe.
Yeah.
And what happens is that while she may avoid pregnancy, she'll end up with an STD,
yep,
and 10, 15 years down the road, find out that she can't have children.
Yep.
We'll pass that STD on, perhaps unwittingly,
yes,
to other people that she has sexual relationships with. It multiplies out from there. She may have to live with the guilt and the scarring,
yep,
that an abortion,
yep,
weighs on her.
You know, Lise, many times we tell these young women that they're going to find happiness in doing this because they'll be free. But I've seen it in my, as a deacon and talking to some young women, is that there's a tremendous amount of loneliness in them and fear and rejection and lack of understanding what love is. They just don't have an understanding of committed love, and they've lost that understanding. For those of you who might be joining us, this is Deacon Jim Thorndahl. We're here on Holy Family Radio, and I'm with Elise Hilton, who's from the Acton Institute. She's a communications specialist. She's going to be having a talk at the Sanchez on April 8th at 6 o'clock, and it's going to be about this this war on women, and that's what we're talking about today. And we'll go back to Elise now. Elise, so continue on with this, with these young women really having a sense of freedom, but really it's in reality, it's keeping them prisoners.
It is keeping them prisoners, and I think that we've really done women a lot of damage in our society in that we've cut them off from what their bodies are for,
yeah,
and are made for, and that sense of nurturing and the ability to create life and sustain life in our own bodies, which is an amazing,
yeah,
gift from God. You know, it's a mystery. We'll never plumb the depths of that, and yet we have severed that in our society for,
yes,
for most women. There are a couple of other topics, too, that I want to talk about that I think really affect young women.
Before
as
we
well.
Get into
sure.
that, I want to follow up on something. You know, this has been a tragedy for women, but I'm looking at now briefly in a male perspective. You know, in many, and maybe you're going to talk about this, but in many ways, this understanding of contracepting and abortion has really damaged men's understanding of who women are.
Yeah, our society is very sex-centric, and that doesn't have anything to do with your gender.
Right.
It's that focus on sex on demand.
Yeah.
It is one of the things that I'm going to touch on. And you think about what our popular culture presents to people as entertainment,
yeah,
today. And I'll just take a couple of pop stars as an example. Beyoncé is one of them.
Of course.
Now, Beyoncé is really interesting in that clearly a very talented young woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she is literally an empire in herself. She makes $350 million dollars a
year. Very wealthy woman.
Very wealthy woman. And did that through her God-given talent. And yet, if I were to read, I couldn't read some of the lyrics.
Oh, I know. I've read them before. They're lewd and obscene.
And yet, she is presented as a real role model for girls. And in fact, she has, as one of her charitable outreaches, is a program that's set up to empower young girls, like 11, 12, 13 years old. And yet I don't know personally any mother that would allow her daughter to sit down and watch a Beyonce video.
Of course.
And if you went to her website, it literally says on every page of her website, warning, adult, material. It is no lie, pornography.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah, it is.
It's horrible.
Even in the dress that she wears, even how she dresses is pornographic.
Absolutely. And yet she's held up as a standard for young women, to achieve and to be powerful.
Yeah.
Another young person, personally, I think is very sad is Miley Cyrus, who, again, very talented young woman, is blessed with a great gift of music from God. And yet the message of her, her shows, her videos, her songs, and along with Beyonce is that I'm strong because of my sexuality.
Exactly.
I'm somebody important because of my body parts. Mm-hmm. And if I withhold that or I don't put that out on display, then somehow I'm powerless.
Exactly.
And that becomes this issue of then a young girl saying, well, in order for me to be strong, in order for me to be somebody, then I have to expose myself, literally, bare my body.
Yes.
Bare my soul, bare my innermost being, put it all out there on display. That's what's going to make me powerful.
Yeah.
And instead, you know, as Catholics and as Christians, we know that the mystique of femininity is just that. It's a mystery.
Exactly.
And that idea of the woman being not covered up or ashamed or being hidden, but rather that there's a withholding of a gift and that
yep.
gift is so special and so sacred that we don't put it out on display for everyone.
I can tell you this right now as a man, and I would speak, I think the men who are listening to the show would tell you the same thing. The most sensuous woman to a man is the one who presents herself in dignity and at charm, and there's a mystique about her as the femininity is just pouring out of her because she really presents herself as not only a child of God, but she presents herself as a woman who knows who she is and what she's created to be. And those are sensuous women.
Yeah, but the problem is that our culture has completely set that aside, and we literally have generations of young men and young women who have never heard that message.
I know.
It's not that they wouldn't like that message. Mm-hmm. They've never heard that message.
But now we go back to these young ladies you just talked about, these singers. You know, you often understand where were the parents in the development and these two young women, because somehow they never learned the dignity of who they were.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they had a good, solid Christian understanding of their femininity, there would have been some rejection of what they're doing right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what Beyonce's parents or Miley Cyrus's parents have ever done or said to her. And I know that as a parent, you know, you can do everything right and your kids have free will.
Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
they get to choose their own ways. And we also know parents who, you know, somehow did everything wrong and they managed to produce really remarkable
Amen.
Kids. That's the gift of free will that God has given us. But I think what's important is that we have these conversations. And we have these conversations with the young people in our lives, regardless of whether or not they're our own children, because we don't know if they've ever heard this message.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know young women who have been sold this bill of goods and don't know that they are worthy of far more than what our society tells them. And some of the other things that we're going to touch upon in this talk about the real war on women also affects young women greatly. There's a very big push right now in our country for college-age women to sell their eggs to pay for college. It looks on the surface, again, like a really great idea.
It looks
noble. Yeah. You know, you're going to be able to provide a child for someone who desperately wants one and for whatever reason can't have one. You get paid quite a bit of money, and then get to graduate from college debt-free, which is an enormous burden. I know I have college-age students of my own, and it weighs very heavily on them. You know, my one daughter, my oldest daughter, just said to me not too long ago, you know, I'm working so hard in college to get good grades and to get through school without incurring too much debt. Am I going to have a job when I get out of college?
Exactly.
You know, and you know, as a Catholic mom, I say to her, you know, pray about it and keep doing what you're supposed to do and find God's plan for your life.
That's right.
But it's a huge burden.
It's a challenge and it's a leap of faith.
It's a leap of faith.
Yes.
But then you're presented with this idea of, well, hey, you can sell your eggs and then you'll be able to graduate from college debt-free. Plus, with the added bonus of giving, you know, couples who can't have children a child.
Right.
What young women don't know is that the procedure of having this egg removal
extracted,
done is terribly difficult and painful.
Mm-hmm.
They pump you full of artificial hormones. They take eggs out, and ladies, I hate to tell you this, you only have so many eggs.
That's right, born is just so
many.
You
know, and you know, you may end up giving away what was meant for you and for your future husband.
That's right.
And the idea that a child is then a commodity, something that we buy and
sell.
You're
really making a deal with the devil.
You are. And surrogacy is also one of those issues. Now, in the United States, it's a much more limited condition because many states have laws limiting what surrogacy is and does. Many states, you know, outlaw completely because they recognize that it's the buying and selling of a child.
Let me ask this question. I believe I read this, but with the egg extraction, isn't there also a chance for infertility in the woman then?
Absolutely.
No longer able to have pregnancy?
Absolutely, because artificial birth control that are insertable, that go inside the women's bodies, can scar and damage a woman's body so that she becomes infertile.
Right. Incapable of ever having children.
Of ever having children biologically,
right.
Which, you know, it is a devastating place to be in.
Yeah.
And then to think that it was because of something you chose to do, you know, would be a huge burden on any woman and on any marriage. It's, you know, I can tell you personally, because my husband and I struggled with infertility, that it's a huge burden on any marriage.
Sure,
it's a difficult thing to go through.
Yeah.
The idea that you may have caused it is just, you know, I can't imagine how devastating that would be for a young woman. But there are places in the United States, again, that young women are sought out for surrogacy. And again, it's the lure of money and the lure of, well, you're doing something rather noble. You're giving people a child that they couldn't have. But again, it's kind of that being led down the primrose path. It's the buying and selling, the commodity of a child.
Have we somehow institutionalized, I mean, just made them, like I said, commodity where there's just not a value to a woman in many people's minds.
Absolutely. And we've been talking primarily about things here in our culture and then in the United States. But I will tell you that we prey on women in the developing world. In India and in Mexico, surrogacy is a huge industry, a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry. And I can tell you from my own research that there are huge clinics in India, and this is what they do. They find young, healthy women who primarily are illiterate and poor. They bring them into these clinics. They fertilize them, get them pregnant, and they pay them for their services. They keep them in these clinics for 9 months.
Oh, my.
And they take care of all of their health needs because they want to make sure that the product that they're getting at the end of that pregnancy is a healthy baby that they can then sell to couples in England, the United States, and you know, other places. India especially has virtually no laws regarding surrogacy. So you think about what we're doing there. We're not just commodifying the baby. We're taking advantage of someone who is illiterate and lives in poverty.
Has no voice for
herself. You know, and here is a woman who maybe thinks that what she's doing, you know, these are women that are doing this so they can send their children to school.
Yes.
So that they can clothe and feed their families.
Yes.
And we're taking advantage of that. That's on us. And that, to me, is a horrifying example of the war on women.
It is.
That we believe that we have the right to go into the developing world and use women as incubators for us.
And some people will never bat an eye, and even knowing adopting that child.
Yeah. Yeah. And we do the same thing with artificial birth control.
Mm-hmm.
We go to developing countries and we pass it out like candy.
Exactly.
And it's got a very clear undertone of racism, because we're going to countries where there are lots of brown people and mm-hmm. lots of black people, and
yes.
we're making decisions that those are people that we don't want too many more of, because that's a burden on us, you know, and so we're going to make sure that there's not too many more of those people. And even more alarming, and I just picked up an article today where the bishops in Kenya are questioning the World Health Organization
yes.
because they're coming in to vaccinate people for tetanus. But what they're doing is they're targeting women between the ages of 14 and 49. Hey, guess what? Those are the ages of fertility.
Childbearing
ages. And those tetanus shots also sterilize women.
Yes.
And they don't know it. Can you imagine what it would be like if we opened up a clinic here in the United States and we unknowingly sterilized
healthy
young people without their knowledge, what the outcry would be. And yet we're doing it in places like Kenya and Peru. And we think that we're doing something noble.
Exactly.
And it's horrifying.
It is horrifying.
Just horrifying.
It is absolutely objectionable in what we do in those countries. But, you know, I think in many ways, even in our own country, in a far subtler way, we do that with our young children, with birth control and teaching them to use that. Because in the same way, we're really teaching them not to procreate, to be married and have children, and to lose their understanding of what it means to be in a couple, married and fulfilling your obligation as parents to have children.
Right, and continues to cheapen the value of the human life.
Yes,
at its most vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not just talking about children in the womb. Those women, those poor women in developing countries who are literally held hostage by their poverty.
Yes.
We're going in and taking advantage of them at their most vulnerable. And rather than going in and saying to them, you know, we can help you It's going to take a while, mm-hmm. and it's going to take a lot of work.
A lot of education.
And yeah, and here's what we're going to do. And I remember not too long ago, I was in a women's Bible study class, and somehow the conversation got turned on this. And one of the women in the Bible study class said to me, "Well, you know, it's really not that bad of an idea to make sure that women in you know, those countries don't have too many children because they can't really afford them, and you know, it's kind of an okay thing if we give them birth control." And I said, "You know, the best way to help women learn how to plan and space their children is to educate them."
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you educate the mother, and I'm talking about helping her learn how to read and write at a high school level.
Exactly.
I'm not talking about giving her a PhD in anything. If you educate the mother, birth rates will drop.
They will.
And women can learn. These women aren't stupid. They're uneducated. We can go in there and easily teach them how to track their own fertility. It doesn't take any marvels of science. You don't have to set up huge clinics.
Right.
You can.
But it does take some cursory education to understand that.
It does. Absolutely. Yes. But, you know, we look at women in the developing world as poor and dumb. Mm-hmm. And the easiest fix is to make sure that they're all sterilized or they all have birth control, and then we don't have to worry about this problem.
But in many third world countries, women are denied some education.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that becomes another problem.
Another war on women.
Exactly. Because they're denied the very essence of having a clear understanding of who they are and what it means to live in this world.
Right, exactly. And so I think when we're talking about this war on women, there are many, many layers to it.
Yeah.
And my hope is that we start discussing what's really underlying all of this.
Yeah.
And what's really underlying all of this is the idea that we have completely lost what it means to be feminine in our society. We've completely lost what it means to be created in the image and likeness of
yes.
God, whether we're male or female.
Yes.
What the purpose of marriage is, the great gift that children are in our society. We tell ourselves that we recognize that,
yeah.
but we really don't.
We don't live it.
We don't live it.
Yeah.
And, you know, even people who may have absolutely no religious convictions at all, you know, will say that they understand what a great gift children are. But we really don't have a society that values
children. But
only
when we decide.
Right. Only when we decide.
Yeah.
And even in our own country, you think about Planned Parenthood, which literally makes all of its money off of women
exactly.
and their bodies.
Exactly.
And where are Planned Parenthood clinics? They're in low-income, high-minority areas.
Yes.
New York City alone, 50% of every pregnancy of a black child ends in abortion.
What a tragedy.
That's genocide.
It is.
And we are not willing to talk about that in our society. We are committing, you know, and I wonder, you know, I can easily sit here as a middle-class white woman and say these things, but I wonder, where are my minority sisters that they're not standing
Speaking up
and screaming this at the top of their lungs, that you are killing us in our society?
I have said many times, we have national figures such as Jesse Jackson and Reverend Sharpton who never bring the subject up. I don't know why, but there's some fear in them of broaching that subject. But as you say, there is a genocide that's going on.
Yes.
Within
our own country, within our own minority
yes,
communities.
Yes. And they need to address that because they need to get to the very core of what that means to live as a free woman.
Yeah. And I am not talking about living a particular faith.
Right.
I'm not calling women. I'd love to have you all in the Catholic Church. Come on in. You're all
welcome.
We're welcoming
you right now.
We'll welcome you right now. Find a Catholic church. Talk to a priest.
That's right.
But I'm not trying to convert anybody to a particular religious belief. What I'm trying to say to my sisters out there is take a look at what our culture is saying and doing to you.
Yeah.
They're making money off of your bodies through egg extraction, through surrogacy, through abortion. Take a look at what you're doing to your own body. You're putting yourself at huge health risks.
Yes.
And risks for sterilization, for STDs.
Yeah.
We're teaching our daughters and our nieces and our granddaughters that the only power that they have is through their sexuality,
mm-hmm.
that they don't have any power through their femininity.
That's right.
And that there's a difference between those two things, that we don't value children in our society. And all of those things are things that, regardless of where you fall on the political or religious spectrum,
right.
we need to be talking about.
Exactly.
And I think that we can have those conversations because there are lots of women out there who don't agree with me politically, who don't agree with me in terms of religious faith, but who are concerned about what goes into their body.
Exactly.
They want to live the healthiest life that they can.
The fate of women.
Right. Yeah. You know, they want to live a healthy life. They're the ones who are out there, like I said, out there jogging, out there, you know, taking their vitamins and making sure that they're getting their checkups annually, and yet they're putting something very dangerous into their bodies. So we can have these conversations regardless of what our backgrounds are or
exactly.
even what our beliefs are about certain things. But we have to have those conversations. And I am also calling on the women that do agree with me to start speaking up.
Exactly.
We have to put ourselves on the front lines. And it's a hard thing to do sometimes because you open yourself up to some real ugliness.
And that's walking the faith.
It is. You know, and I can attest to that because, you know, I write a lot on the Acton blog, and there are certainly, you know, slings and arrows that are thrown at us for writing what we believe to be
right.
true and good. And it's hard to stand up for your faith and say what's true. But unless we do, more lives will be lost. And that's not being, I'm not overstating it. I literally mean lives will be lost.
Well, Christ said it very clearly. If you're not willing to take up your cross and follow me, and that's a burden, that you're not fit for the kingdom.
Right.
And that really is picking up your cross, because that has to be known. But, you know, I know I've read in the past, too, on some statistics, and I wish women would look at this, but when birth control, contraceptive became popular, the abortion rate went up.
Yes.
And not only that, but we saw more depression in women, and we saw some suicidal tendencies.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that women have been told is that there's a very simple equation. It's more contraception plus access to abortion
uh-huh.
equals freedom and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And that equation does not work.
No.
You know, all you have to do is look at what has happened to the state of the family in the United States in the past 50 years.
Devastating.
The divorce rate, what has happened to abortion rates in this country. Yes, we contracept, and that should mean lower abortion rates,
yeah.
but what it means is far higher abortion rates.
Yes.
Why is that? That's the conversation we should be having
yes.
with each other and
exactly.
saying, you know.
But there's a rational reason for it.
Of course there's a rational
yeah.
reason for it. And I think that, you know, women need to be asking, why are we making ourselves guinea pigs for medical companies, for places like Planned Parenthood? Why are we allowing our bodies to be used in this way that they're making money off of us?
Yeah.
And why are we putting up with that?
Exactly.
But again, we need to have these conversations, and we need to be brave about it and be bold and
yeah.
step up and say, this is not the truth, and
yeah.
this is not what is good, and this is not what is healthy.
Elise, let me touch on another thing, too, while I have a little bit of time left, because it really affects a lot of the men I talk to, because this war on women has a real correlation to men and pornography. And, you know, the understanding has been that men are lookers. We know that's
right.
how we're stimulated.
Right.
But, you know, it's been an unhealthy understanding now of how we view women, because women are now looked at as just an object. And if a husband isn't satisfied with his wife in the bedroom, he can just as easily turn to the computer or to his phone, his smartphone, and he can find what he's looking for on there. And it cheapens the understanding of the relationship of men and women.
Yeah, and unfortunately, women are in many cases an unwitting partner in that.
Yeah.
There was just a case in the past couple of weeks that's come up in the press of a young woman who goes by the name of Belle Knox, who is a Duke University student and is very proudly putting herself through school by starring in porn films.
Oh, I think I saw that.
It's really, really sad.
Yeah.
That first of all, she thinks that this is her only option.
Yeah.
You know, and clearly college educations are expensive. But she said, you know, I'm not going to be able to wait tables and make enough money to put myself through school without getting through debt. I can make all the money I need doing this. We've created, this form of entertainment, and I'm putting that in quotes,
mm-hmm.
When it's really enslavement.
Yes.
It enslaves the women and men that are involved in the creation,
yes,
of pornography, and it enslaves the viewers. And what's as terrible as it is to find out that your husband or your wife is viewing pornography,
mm-hmm,
what's more devastating...
And by the way, that's on the rise with women.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's more devastating is that it's so readily available to our children.
Yeah.
And we've completely blurred the lines from what used to be, you know, at the triple X movie theater,
right,
that nobody would ever be dare, you know, go see.
Or admit going to.
Admit going to having it as part of our music awards,
yeah,
on television.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, you have Miley Cyrus performing what is literally a sexual act,
right,
on TV. Like I said before, Beyonce's website is literally a porn site. We've completely blurred the lines between what is entertainment, what is pornography,
yeah,
what is acceptable, what isn't acceptable. We've made it easily available to our children.
Yeah.
And again, it enslaves people rather than, you know, becomes a form of, it's not a form of entertainment, it's a form of enslavement.
Yes, it is.
And they don't know it until the chains are on.
And I only can think of this poor woman who's selling herself in a pornographic movie. One day she will look back by the grace of God and say, you know, I've seen, but it'll forever be out,
yeah,
there for publication. And,
yeah,
you know, and this is something I never think about,
no,
in the long run. But, you know, in about a couple of minutes we have left, Elish, if you were to tell women one thing today, what would that be? What would you tell them to look for?
If they're women of faith, I would say be brave, be bold, speak up, and be the one that's willing to say in a conversation, that's wrong.
Yeah.
And here's why it's wrong.
Yeah.
And be able and be willing to risk friendships in order to save lives.
Yes, exactly.
If they're not women of a particular faith, or they consider themselves to be you know, feminists of a more radical form, I would ask them to look at the cold hard facts,
mm-hmm,
of what's happening to women's bodies and,
yes,
their health because of the chemicals that are pushed on us, the genocide in minorities in this country, how we prey on women in the developing world. Those are things that, regardless of your political or religious beliefs, you should be able to look at and say, that's wrong.
Yes,
and we,
exactly,
should not be doing that.
Yes.
So those are the couple of things that I would say to women.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping our listeners today here at Holy Family Radio, you're listening to Elish Hilton, and we had this conversation about really this war on women, and women, you need to arm yourself with the truth, and you need to be able to speak boldly and do it through education, not just through rattling off statistics, but really having a heart for the Lord
yes.
and understanding what it means to live in freedom as a woman.
Yes.
Alicia, I want to thank you for being here today because you've really enlightened me, enlightened our audience, and what it means that we have to be looking at because our culture will never tell us the truth.
No.
We have to hear it from people who are really walking this walk that you are. And I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate the Acton Institute and all that you're doing. And now, again, April 8th at Sanchez.
At Sanchez Bistro, 6 o'clock. And if you go to acton.org and look at our events page, you can find the information there.
Wonderful. And to all our listeners today, may God bless. And thank you again, Alicia, for being here.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.